Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. The holiday season for many of us means traditions, especially when it comes to what we eat this time of year. Chef Lydia Bastianich traveled the United States to learn about some of these traditions, and those lessons, combined with her own immigrant experiences, are part of her new holiday special from PBS. It's titled Lydia Celebrates America, a Heartland Holiday Feast, and it premieres tonight on PBS Channel 2. Joining us from New York is Lydia Bastianich. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Lydia.
Thank you. Thank you. Always a pleasure.
So you've been traveling the country for these holiday season specials, sort of celebrating America. Well, why do it with these programs?
This is a special that I do once a year for PBS. I am discovering America. I am an immigrant, and, you know, America is made of immigrants. You know, it's a great country, a strong country. We're all together. And yet, there's so much diversity within America. And I'm just discovering it bit by bit. And food is my way into everybody's kitchen, everybody's home.
Yeah, you're always invited, right? I mean,
absolutely. You know, you talk food and people kind of relax and open the door, hopefully, and set the table up.
This year, you visit parts of rural America, and you begin in a place that has a very special connection for you in Sunbury, Pennsylvania.
Yes, Sunbury, Pennsylvania was a little town right on the Susquehanna that I spent my sophomore year in high school there, the Sunbury High School. You know, I came as a 13-year-old immigrant. I came from Italy, and in Italy, I spent a lot of time with grandma and sort of out in the suburbs with she had her chickens and her ducks and the pigs and whatever. And so when I came to big city New York, as amazing as it was a bit overwhelming. So my mother thought that it would do me good to go visit some distance cousin in Sunbury, Pennsylvania, and maybe do a year there. And I did. And I had a great time, and I have great memories. So I thought, you know, I'm going to go back there and see how my family's doing and how the neighborhood is doing, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And so what kind of food did you make when you were there? That's the first question.
Well, you know, when I first went there, you know, Sunbury, Pennsylvania is not too far from Dutch country or the Amish and all of that. So when I was there, I remember my cousins used to take me and eat things like, you know, shoe fly pie and succotash and all of that. These were all new things for me. But they remained in me. And still to this day, you don't find shoe fly pie in New York, I don't think. But go back there and you find it. And we kind of found Debbie, this wonderful woman in Dutch country, that showed me how to make shoe fly pie. And now I really know how to make it, not only eat it, not only say, you know, shoe fly pie. The amazing thing was I said, so what does shoe have to do with the pie? But then Debbie explained to me, because shoe fly pie is made out of molasses, sticky, it would always attract a lot of fly. So they will shoo the fly off the pie. And that's how it got its name, shoo fly.
Okay, well, A, I need you to explain to our listeners what shoo fly pie is, aside from molasses, and B, how did you make it?
Well, she first made a crust, like a regular crust, some dough, some butter, some brown sugar, made the crust and made some crumbled as well. And then cooked the molasses with sugar, with some butter, and again, the flour. And that was the filling, but it was more like a loose filling when it was poured in. And then the crumbs, you know, like you do an apple crumb pie, the crumbs were put on top, and then that is baked until the liquid the settles in the pie, and then you have to let it rest, and that's shoe fly pie. Very sticky, very sweet, delicious, very different.
So tell me, what were some of the surprising recipes that you heard about in some of these rural communities? In Louisiana, you learned how to make filet. And what is that?
Right, right. From Pennsylvania, we went down to Louisiana. That's a very kind of mixed culture. You know, it's French, it's Spanish, it's African, American, Indian. Yeah, gumbo, I wanted, you know, I ate it many times, so I had to make it. And phyllo is an herb. It's leaves of the sassafras tree. And they pick it off, let it dry, and they crumble it into this fine dry mixture. Like for us Italian, it would be oregano. Mm. And it was really wonderful to see, you know, how all of these different cultures ended up into the Creole cooking traditions that are today.
Mm. You also, you had some eel.
Oh, yeah, but the eel was up in, it's Walker, Minnesota, this lake, and it was completely frozen. And the lake almost looked like a little town because everybody had their little kind of fishing house. I guess at this time of the year, the eel begins to move and look for a mate, and that's a good fishing time. So I brought my grandson, Miles, who's a fisherman, loves fishing, and we ended up actually catching an eel pout. It's really a codfish. It resembles a codfish, but it's really ugly, and it's delicious. We made fritters right on the ice. Mm. And there, the culture goes back to the Norwegians, the Swedes. Even the fishermen, they look like Vikings, red beards, but they were three, four, five generation Americans. And it was, you know, amazing to see how they still keep their sort of Scandinavian traditions.
I wonder where the tradition of kissing the fish came from. Did you really kiss the fish, Lydia?
I did.
Why? Whose tradition is that, to kiss the eel?
I don't know. Either they con me or it is a real tradition, but I kissed that eel.
What was the purpose of kissing the eel, were you told?
I don't know. I guess it's the first eel and you're supposed to kind of congratulate or celebrate the moment.
So what would you say was some of the more surprising things, maybe the most surprising thing, if there is one, that you learned on this sort of rural culinary tour of America?
You know, what was really what I found very interesting is when I went to Lawton, Oklahoma, what was interesting there, I had a chance to kind of meet and even cook out, if you will, in the outpost with the Buffalo Soldiers Association. Now, the Buffalo Soldiers, after the Emancipation Proclamation, there was a lot of young African-American that needed a job, that wanted to be part of the American Army. And so the American Army set this frontier kind of post that was called the Buffalo Soldiers, and they were all Afro-American soldiers. We actually went out and cooked on the open hearth and salted pork and corn cake and beans, and we made coffee on the day. So it was that I really enjoyed because, you know, as I came here as a young immigrant, I watched a lot of those cowboy Indian movies, and you would see the cowboys and the Indians, whatever, the cowboys cooking out there. And so now I got a chance to really experience that.
Hmm. And you had Mexican tamales, and you had a pork dish that was made from some members of the Hmong community. Really varied experiences.
It is. I mean, we're looking for the diversity of the different cultures and how they ultimately become American and settling to America, and how this is what makes America really very special and very strong, is that, you know, we're all American, a strong country, and yet within this very strong country, we are allowed to sort of be who we are ethnically. And that doesn't happen in any other country.
Hmm. Well, I mean, and there's some people who might argue that it's changing here. You know, this is a difficult climate for folks who are coming into this country, for immigrants in particular. There's a raging debate going on. I'm wondering, with that being the backdrop, you know, how important is food as a way to bond people? Can it really be done in the environment that we're in right now?
You know, yes, there's a bit of a turmoil of that's going on. I think that there's the strength of these different ethnicities and belonging all to the great country that is America. And certainly the table and food is a glue, an element that binds us in a sense. I always thought that food diplomacy should be part of how they discuss diplomacy at the UN. sit down, have a meal, eat each other's meal, and you'll understand better each other's cultures. And then maybe you can begin to reason because, you know, food has a positive connotation. So definitely, you know, I think that us getting to know our neighbors, getting to know through their food is one way. That's what I'm doing. I think food is a way to connect, is a glue that really pulls us together if we share it.
So I wonder what's on your holiday table this year, and did your table adapt at all because of this trip around America?
Well, it always, you know, when you go out and you learn and you like things, there's always something that remains. Every trip leaves me with something that I want to try when I get back home into my kitchen. The succotash. Now, do you know what succotash is? Succotash is a Dutch kind of Pennsylvania Dutch or whatever. And it is a combination of lime beans and corn, all fresh, those kind of shelled pod, if you will, goodies. We have something similar in Italy. Again, a mixture of peas, but we put artichokes, favas, and all of that. So I kind of combine. I put corn. Those two are two dishes that kind of parallel each other. And I kind of made a combination of both of them.
Mm. What are the sort of the three mainstays of your holiday table this year, your tradition?
Well, for me, it's Christmas, and it's Christmas Eve is a big part of the holiday, celebrating the fish. And of course, we have to have our bacalà and our fried calamari, some pasta with seafood, whether it's mixed seafood, whether it's just clams. And then, of course, the braised fish, but bacalà is a must.
And that's for Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve. The Christmas Day, it's a very festive day. Lots of meat. Because, you know, meat was not all that abundant in Europe, at least when I grew up. And so when a holiday came about, Christmas was about pork. And usually grandma had two porks and, you know, she slaughtered them. And pork was part of the main, and roast. Roast was very much. And then, of course, quince. We had quince apple. We roasted the quince apple. So I remember a lot of roasting in the oven. And I kind of mimicked that. I love using the oven and all the smells that come out of it. In the beginning, there's an antipasto, of course, and that's kind of a lot of affettati, prosciutto, mortadella, grana padano, all of that cheese, olives, and some salads. Mm. And the pasta part is the little stuffed pasta, tortellini, agnolini, or homemade pasta. So I'm going to have that this year as well.
Lydia Bastiana, chef, TV host, author, and restaurateur. Her latest television special is Lydia Celebrates America, a Heartland Holiday Feast. It airs tonight on PBS Channel 2. Lydia, thanks so much. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you and to your listeners.
And you can find some of the recipes from Lydia's journey at our website, radioboston.org. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, Zoe Mitchell, and Eve Zukoff. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hati. I'm Deborah Becker. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.